In this last lecture, Father John Hardin speaks on the subject, the future of religious life. Father Hardin.
I thought there was value, and more than passing value, in speaking about the future of religious life, because in so many quarters, this is being challenged, questioned, and even denied. In fact, among the astounding statements that Pope Paul VI made in his Evangelica Testificatio to the world's religions, early in that document he says, there are so many now who are saying religious life is disappearing and will never return. How then and why then are we sure that there is a future to religious life in the Catholic Church? The reason is because God has revealed it. Thanks to the Second Vatican Council, and no doubt this was the watershed between the time when people took religious life for granted and when people have come to want to phase religious life out of existence or so redefine it that what's left is no longer the religious life known for centuries in the Catholic Church. It was in that Second Vatican Council that the Church declared in the most unequivocal terms, religious life belongs to the very nature, that means essence, of the Church. Indeed, the Catholic Church needs, and Christ will make sure it will always have, religious. Why? In order that they might witness, that is religious, might witness to those values which the world needs to be saved and sanctified. We then have the teaching of the Church based on the life and example of the Savior himself. How do we know there will be religious life? Because there will always be people like Christ, striving to imitate his life and follow out his teaching until the end of time. What's a second reason based on Revelation? That is the history of the first century church. As you know, we believe that God's public revelation continued until the end of the first century. Consequently, revelation is not only in the Bible, it's also in tradition. That first century church already had, from the very beginning, people living the revealed equivalent of poverty, chastity, and obedience, and together. The very word community is revealed, koinonia. And it occurs exactly two verses after Peter finished his discourse on Pentecost Sunday. Already in the first century, as we saw, remember, at the very beginning of the course last year, or was it even more than a year ago, that already in the first century, there were virgines, there were ascetici, there were those people who had consecrated their lives in chastity and who practiced virtues in community. Though the rest of the faithful, though good followers of Christ, did not have the grace because they were not called upon to do. And that, I repeat, is revealed. that first century church is normative for all centuries. Because revelation is not only, I repeat, in the written, but also in the lived Word of God, which I prefer to oral. Revelation is in that first century church, which already then had the revealed equivalent of religious. Second aspect, purification. When we say that religious life in the future will be purified, we should immediately add that religious life is being purified, especially by two forces in the modern world, secularism and atheism. Sin has always purified the followers of Christ. Religious life is being purified from the inside by secularism, which has deeply penetrated so many communities, and by atheism outside. And that combination is purifying religious life in the extreme. Just last week, I got a letter, two more of my former Jesuit priests left the priesthood. I have stopped counting the stray sheep that I had taught into and in the priesthood. So secularism that has penetrated into religious life. I trust none of us has any doubt about that phenomenon. And is being purified through atheism outside of religious life. Often very subtle, very powerful. For example, the media. How hard it is for religious to remain religious in the face of the barrage in today's unbelieving, even atheistic world. If that is the means of purification, in terms of the ideologies, the philosophies of secularism and atheism, what are some of the phenomena that are purifying religious life? I would say it is especially by the disappearance of not a few members of religious communities, and a growing disappearance of religious communities. That is purifying. I can speak with complete security, and I could quote you statistics by the hour on the percentage and the numbers lost in all the major institutes and the Catholic Church. Some real surprises. One third of the world's Trappists. About one fourth of the world's Jesuits. That's a lot of religious. So by the disappearance, no matter what term we use, it is purification. But it's not only members, it's the disappearance, perhaps a little less obvious, of whole communities. When some 2 years ago I was conferring in Rome with the editor of the Society of St. Paul, the men's counterpart to the Daughters of St. Paul, who have been publishing, you may have heard about this, an encyclopedia in Italian of the Institutes of Christian Perfection. They've been upwards of 20 years on the project. They are up to about volume 7 now, have not yet completed. They're going alphabetically from A to, I think they're up to about R or S, but not complete. We have contracted, our institute has contracted, with the Society of St. Paul in Rome to publish an international directory, about one or two pages at most because of the sheer numbers, about one or two pages for every institute of Christian perfection in the Catholic Church. There are now over 4,000 pontifical and diocesan institutes. But the editor told me one of our problems in editing this encyclopedia is that even as we reach one letter of the alphabet, we discover that a community that had been listed in an earlier part of the alphabet, C's, D's, or lower down, have, since we began the encyclopedia, have disappeared. And I need not tell you, the end is not in sight. Historically, no one knows. The thousands of religious institutes that have existed in the Church's history, and the number is in the thousands, it is a sobering fact that most of them have disappeared. Not to know that is to be living in a fool's paradise. And they are disappearing now. And they will disappear, for example, in a country like ours. So the purification is, first of all, by the disappearance of so many members. You don't lose in my own beloved Society of Jesus, for whose interest I offer 5 first intention masses every month. That's a lot of masses offered by some 17,000 priests throughout the world. But you don't lose over 9,000 members without being purified in the process. Including, as I mentioned, my last director in Chicago and my first director in New York. Also, the disappearance of institutes. Some that are still holding on, but not for long. There is also a purification through merger, which the Holy See has strongly recommended. The merger of 2 kinds of entities, of members who have remained faithful with others who have remained faithful, whether forming a new enclave or segment within an existing community or with a corresponding segment of another community. And new communities being formed out of the merger of communities whose existing membership cannot survive except through some few strong, hardy souls that have both the courage and the conviction that at least as far as in them lies, religious life will, please God, survive. So much for the purification. Now the strengthening. We might say, and correctly, for the purification is already itself a form of strengthening. We can say that safely, because if there is one thing of which religious needed to be cleansed, it was pride. And the Lord, when He cleans thoroughly to the bottom. Our late general, Father Jansen, told us, warning us 20 years ago, in God's name, learn some humility. Because he had the courage to say, it was for lack of humility that we were suppressed in the 18th century. You know, don't you? The Jesuits were put out of existence by the Holy See. What a frank declaration, but also what a needed one. How humiliating to know that the houses of study in which I have done my training are now in other hands. Unbelievers. And the very chapels where thousands of masses were said, never again will the body of blood of Christ be offered again. So the purification is already a strengthening. Because if we have any illusions about religious life being the work of man, we know better now. And we'd better learn the lesson. I dare say these 2 hours on the future of religious life will be the most frank and sober in all the lectures I've given you on this subject. Here I need very few notes. All I need is my memory. But there are other forms of strengthening beyond purification. There is a strengthening through a deeper poverty. I guess by now I have tired repeating, as I must have told you a dozen or more times, look to your poverty. Look to your poverty. This is not a luxury. This is a necessity. Only religious communities who really live poverty will survive. Honest. Honest. No others. All the big fancy multi-million dollar buildings, notwithstanding, I've seen them. They will be specters of reproach. Once, if so many have become closed for failure to live genuine lives of poverty, no excuse. Even though we are living in the world's wealthiest nation, well, come to think of it, not much longer, eh? How the United States needs the witness of poor religious to help it cope. The United States, I'm living in the financial capital of the world in New York. They all say, America is in for a long, long economic recession. Very long. And some claim out of which you will never again recover. Thank God. We've been living in a fool's paradise. And most of the human race goes to bed hungry. And we stuffed ourselves And as one commentator said, America wastes more food which it throws away in a given year than the whole nation of France needs to feed itself. At any rate, a deeper sense of poverty is the only kind of communities that we'll have. A clearer possession of truth, that is, of the true faith. Reread Pope John Paul. His middle name might just as well be Truth. John Faith Paul. Believe in the truth of the faith. The faith of religious communities will be much sharper, much clearer. Who are the Pope's worst enemies in the world today? One guess. Religious. Ignoring him, opposing him, and if they're learned, and I know so many of them, writing against him. They will, for the future, in terms of strengthening, be a firmer community life. There has to be. I hope you agree with me. Religious communities can't go on the way some of their communities exist. Do you agree? Can't go on. If, from the very beginning, indeed the first century, if what we've come to call religious life is community life, and that is willed by Christ, he's going to have people, not prima donnas, not individualists, not persons who look to their own interests first, and then, if others can benefit, so be it. But whatever it means in our modern jargon, about submerging the ego, that's the kind of religious life we're going to have. So much for the strengthening. Now the features. We'll spend most of the time on this aspect of our subject. I've never given this kind of a lecture before, so there may be some surprises even for me. As I've told people so often, I often don't know what I'm going to say next, but the Lord does, and my prayer is that he wants me to say it. When I speak of features, first one large feature. There is due in the Roman Catholic Church a renaissance of religious life, such as she has never had before. How soon? God knows. On what scale? God knows. Where it will begin? God knows. Who will be the new champions, the new Benedicts and Francis's and Dominics and Ignatius and Don Bosco's? God knows. But for this too we have the evidence of revelation. Remember? Where sin abounds, their grace more abounds. And who in his right Catholic mind would question that sin abounds in religious life? there, not somewhere else, that others give their lectures. I'm giving this one. Religious life is due for a marvelous, supernatural renaissance. And I want to think, I really do, that we are part of that renaissance. In fact, whoever uses these vocables, who would talk this language, or if I had the nerve to talk this way, unless there were people like you willing to listen, there wouldn't be an audience. Which then, of course, raises some responsibility on our part, doesn't it? That's why I think it's worth it. And I hope you do. Not just for the classes such as they are, but all that this Renaissance will imply, because it is a costly effort. God's grace will be available, but we had better be willing to pay the price. Not everyone will. That's what this is all about. Those who are willing will be part of the church's renewal. The Second Vatican Council couldn't have discovered a more apt word than a renewal, a renaissance of religious life. What are two of its main features before we show how it will be shown in an increase of what kind of communities? I'm still not up to this. I'm still behind it. The two main features are those spelled out by the Second Vatican Council. Namely, this Renaissance will take place and will be as effective as it reflects the true charism of each community and no other. I dare say never before in the history of the Church has there been a more earnest and eager reassessment, deeper understanding, and a stronger desire to discover our roots than now. Let me add, among communities that have a future. That's the first feature. And the second is one that the Holy Father, present one, is especially stressing. Being sure that we are aware of today's world. All sorts of cheap meanings have been attached to the word adaptation. But you almost hate to use the word. It is awareness of the present world. That's what the Holy Father is insisting on. That we hold on to our premises, not let go of our principles, but be sure that those principles and premises are being lived out in today's world. It's a very different world, to say the least. A very demanding world. A strange world. Very unbelieving world. Now, the Renaissance, and this is where I take, I suppose, the biggest risk, because I must continue, I am not infallibly sure. Only Christ is, and whenever his vicar chooses to so speak. That's not me. But first, I think there will be an increase of communities that are contemplative. Both those that are fully and completely contemplative, cloistered, whether centrality on the Holy Eucharist and complete enclosure in all communities. Future religious communities will all be more authentically, more deeply contemplative. I have so many evidences of this. First, in the tragedy of so many once flourishing contemplative communities defaulting and secularizing. Some of the stories are just blood-curdling. What's happening to once flourishing contemplative institutes? Just received a letter the other day, in fact yesterday, from a priest who wants to make a retreat. He's a religious but not a cloistered monk, but he would like to make his retreat in a cloistered men's monastery. And he asks, "Do you know of a good one?" And he proceeded to describe his experiences last year, which were not good. In the East, my first year in New York, I gave a retreat to a cloistered religious community. He intended to have adoration of the Blessed Sacrament. The first thing that I did when I started the 8-day retreat was to retrieve the monstrance and put it back, find it. They've done more Eucharistic adoration during those 8 days than they had, I don't know, for how long before. Is the one retreat I made sure was not recorded. What I said should not be recorded. So, there will be an increase of contemplative communities. The young people want it. Do you know this? They really do. Now, literally hundreds of thousands, just hundreds of thousands of young people have become victims of some of these incredible sects. They're looking for a deep interior life. They really are. They really are. And the Church of God will not fail them. There will be new contemplative institutes. Those that are unworthy will disappear. And I predict the distinction between active and contemplative, as we now use it, will at least in effect disappear. Because all the activity that some of our so-called active communities have been engaged in, well, by now you know what it was, and sadly often is, social, political, everything except that which religion should mainly do, namely commune with God. With so many of the laity reciting the divine office, and some, honestly, executives, reciting the divine office, laymen. How can we religious excuse ourselves on the score of being too busy? There will be an increase of contemplative life in the religious state. Second, as far as I can modestly predict, there will be an increase of what I call catechetical communities. We can safely judge God's providence in the future by the needs of the people in the present. There are today, and these are conservative figures, over 6 million Catholic children, 16 and under, that are getting no formal religious instruction from anyone. And even some of the instruction they're getting, as you know, is sometimes not just sad, but positively bad. The Holy Spirit will not fail his people. How they're praying, so many parents begging the dear Lord to bring back their Catholic schools. And I'm speaking of the right city. As I mentioned at one occasion, in 1 year, 26 Catholic schools were sold to the city of Chicago. Now, the catechetical will take many forms. We'll touch on the schools later on because of other problems that are facing the church in the foreseeable future. But religious instruction must be given, and religious will arise. Existing communities will reassess their priorities. And we'll also ask themselves, can we do more? On the first level, Mother Teresa told me that of the previous chapter, not the last one, she was afraid that her community would suffer through secularization because they're not praying enough. So she urged the chapter to pass a resolution and make it part of the Constitution, besides all the regular prayers they had been saying, just a priori, to add each day 1 hour before the Blessed Sacrament, required of every sister. It was passed, and she says, we have been happier and holier ever since. So on the second level, the catechetical, same thing. The needs are so massive in a city like Chicago, beyond description, especially among the young, that the Lord will raise both new institutes, will inspire present ones to share the faith they possess with others at no matter what cost to themselves. Third, and this is going to be the hard one, a distinctive feature of the future of religious life is an increase of mendicant communities. What are mendicant communities? Those who beg. I mean that literally. Religious life, from the very beginning, was mendicant. Because who was the first great mendicant? Christ himself, right? And we, with our multi-million dollar investments, I'm taking a chance when I speak this way, but there's no choice, because I see many communities, still otherwise flourishing communities, playing with fire, too little dependent on God's providence and too much on human shrewdness, investment, or capital. The willingness to beg on every level, from the top down, I would say, is a sign of a flourishing religious institute. you might be tempted to say to yourselves, well, I guess you're saying this, speaking of me, because that's what the books say. Or it's the edifying thing to say. Or it sounds pious. No. I don't know the answer. I really don't. But I know there is no other way of ensuring the future of religious life than making sure that religious do not rely on human resources and human finance for the work that Christ called them to do, but depend on the generosity of the faithful. I was teaching in southern Indiana. I gave one of the longest and most difficult retreats in my priestly life. The numbers, 150 or so making the retreat, four conferences, confessions, long private counseling far into the night, 8 full days. St. Ignatius forbade us. Would to God we had remained faithful to that. He forbade us to ever demand payment for our services. You know what I got? My travel. But I should add, not quite. You don't do what this unworthy servant of God is trying to do without believing that begging belongs to the imitation of Christ. No wonder St. Ignatius, for his sons who take solemn vows, about a fourth of us do. Those who take solemn vows take four other vows besides. One of which is a vow never to weaken the poverty of the order, because those who are solemnly professed are the only ones who have juridical rights in the order to vote. I wish that vow had always been observed. We wouldn't be in the trouble in which we are now. Mendicant communities. This is a hard saying. It's not obvious. In our financially resourceful United States, with all sorts of financial backing and protection by you name it whom. Again, if I quote Mother Teresa often, it's only because that woman has deeply influenced my life. Once in conversation with her in the Bronx, with all the noise and dirt all around, telephone rang, as it for her, came back in about less than 10 minutes, beaming. I said, what's the joy? Oh, she said, I just turned down $800,000. Happy as a schoolgirl. So what happened? Well, this gentleman offered us $800,000. But the money had to be invested on his terms. And we just don't do that. Constitutionally, they may have no invested money. And as she said, when the faithful stop supporting us, we'll disappear. Maybe by then we should. We need this kind of language. We really do. So the increase of mendicant communities.
The please turn over to side B and push the play button immediately without rewinding the tape.